This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. You're listening to Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
It's all about living your best life
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Welcome to Afternoons with Helen Farmer podcast. I'm Siobhan Aidan, I'm filling in for Helen. Coming up, we discussed job security and salaries. Job seeker Teresa Dutoit, the Best Places to Work annual report, staying safe online, finding your ikigai, and how to disconnect to reconnect.
This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Join the conversation
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Up next, I'm looking forward to welcoming my first guest of the programme, David McKenzie, Group Managing Director at McKenzie Jones Group, to talk to us all about the jobs of the future.
Life Balance on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Good afternoon, David. Great to have you on the show.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
Excellent. I'm worried about the iRobot nation that we're going to be talking about now.
Oh, no. Well, that's going to be, my first question, if you are worried about that.
No. I think, look, I worked for a business called Monster.com years ago, and we always predicted the end of recruitment companies because everyone's going to find their jobs online. I think there's a list, I think, 5-10 people on this thing we did with The National, and over 5 of those are traditional jobs. So I think if you're worried about the future, don't be. I think you will naturally evolve, and there will be jobs for everyone at some degree. But most jobs that are taken over by bots or robots or whatever are jobs that are repetitive, that can be done by automation, basically.
Mm. Which are, to be fair, quite a lot, though, as well. And it's not just, I suppose it's not necessarily taking over all parts of it. I mean, but there are now talk of accountants, you know, being the jobs that they do, number putting, inputting, is it all can be done online. Even, you know, you've got online doctors now as well, all these sorts of things. So it is creeping slowly, but definitely surely, I think, upon all mainstream jobs too. I mean,
I think they are, but we have to remember that you gave 2 examples. They're online doctors. There are doctors that back up some of that diagnosis. They have to. So I think what's going to happen is some of those repetitive functions where, if you look at, that glorious man, Mr. Trump, said ages ago that we're going to make America great again by bringing jobs back to America. What he failed to tell the American public was most of the jobs that have been automated were things like farmhands and some car technicians and things, where the jobs were literally robots are put in and they could do 30 people's jobs. And I think with accountants and things, you've got to remember accountants interpret numbers. We're not at that stage yet, or certainly for the next stage for a couple of years, where AI can interpret numbers to the degree that probably humans can. So it's going to happen, but at the moment you just need to look at your current job and figure out how you can do more that will lead you into these future jobs.
Well, let's look at that then. What do you think are some of the roles that will be sought after? I mean, we've mentioned a bit: finance, marketing, human resources. Are they still going to be around in the future?
Yeah, I think they are. I mean, the traditional jobs, I mean, some of the ones that aren't going to be around, as I keep saying, are the ones that are probably the more lower level ones that can be done by machines, and there are loads of those these days. But things like, you know, an HR manager, when you've got to deal with people, and believe me, there will still be people around in the future, maybe not as many, but things like the obvious ones that are coming out now are things like AI engineers, software engineers. You know, you look at Tesla now. Tesla doesn't have an engineer that looks at the engine. It looks at how you program the car and how you calibrate the brakes, and it can all be done online. So some of the traditional skills will start to disappear. Mm. But I think if you're looking at going forward, anything that is coding related, artificial intelligence, AI, anything that where you can utilize technology to make everyone's life easier will be the future, without a doubt.
Right. I mean, we talk about the future. It sounds like it's not really, we don't know where obviously the future is in one second
now.
But, you know, when is this time? And as you mentioned, you used to work at a recruitment consultancy some years ago, and you thought that now this, which was the future, you'd be made redundant, but you're still going. So Are we just sort of scaremongering people too much? I think, to a degree, yes.
I mean, I feel sorry for those people out there who are probably in their, you know, mid-30s are going, I'm not a technology person. I don't know how to code. I don't want to code. I'm just very good at what I do in finance or marketing or HR. There will still be roles for you, but your job will change. So what you have to do as a potential job seeker is start to look at what are the new trends coming through. So, example, in marketing, it's digital marketing. It's all about CRM. It's all about social, etc. So if you're a traditional marketing person that's marketing, let's say, baked beans or something, you've got to figure out a way, how can you upskill yourself so that as the future starts to, or as future marketing starts to impact your day-to-day life, you're able to understand how these new changes are taking place and adopt them and be good at them. Mm. So I don't think we do scaremonger people. And I think, example, I'll give you a very good example. My sons are not particularly technical, but my eldest son is going in the army. There are more needs for soldiers these days, despite the army reducing in force, because they're becoming smaller, more focused battalions. So I think that's the same in everyday work life. You're always going to need humans, and you're always going to need a human's perspective on things.
Thank you for saying that. Hopefully we'll look back at this conversation and go,
I hope so.
A robot might be looking back and going, ha, not true. But, you know, it's really interesting. And I've just been reading, or sort of dipping in and out of, because it is quite heavy. I actually downloaded the audiobook. I don't know if you've read it yourself, but it's 20 Questions for the 21st Century by Yuval Noah Harari. It's oftentimes been quoted. And there's big chapters on education and obviously on work and what it will look like. And he does say that machine and robots will change every form of work. He also argues that billions will become redundant, or new technologies will indeed keep people in jobs. So, you know, you do have two sides to this. But some people believe that a huge percentage of jobs in the future haven't yet been invented.
True.
As you mentioned, I'm not so worried about myself now, but I am slightly worried about my children. You know, what sort of jobs will they be looking at, you know, as they haven't been invented yet?
I know, but the reality is, back when I was younger, then they were saying exactly the same thing. And the reality is that, you know, as a 15, 16, 18, whatever, you know, your world is very different to what ours was back in the day. And I think people have the propensity to change very quickly. And I think this won't happen overnight. This will be a gradual change. Now, they are speeding up as time goes on, because technology is changing everything we do. But, you know, you remember 20 years ago, you never looked at your Instagram so much, did you? But now you use it all the time. Most people do. Exactly. So, but you get used to change very quickly. So what we need to do with our kids, to a degree, is get them geared up for what the future is. And schools are doing this a lot more, and so are apprentice schemes. So here's a really good example. There are more and more people in Europe going into apprenticeships now than going to universities, because people want to learn skills that are right for the future. So people like Land Rover or Tata Group are taking loads of apprentices to learn about engineering skills now. Now, a lot of that is technology engineering, but you've got to remember, people do change very quickly. And I think what we mustn't do, and I think you emphasized this before, there are people now who are your listeners who are going, well, I haven't got the ability to change, or I don't want to change, so what do I do to ensure that my future career is bulletproof? And I think that the one thing I would advocate everyone to do is just keep learning and keep improving yourself. Take new courses, go into your internal company and try and find different jobs that you'll be interested in. Those are the things to do. But don't just panic and jack your job in and try and go for an AI engineer when you've got no skills at all.
Great advice there, David. Yeah. You are very much, obviously, in the know when it comes to what's happening in terms of job market, David. Mm. What is happening right now? We've seen some really positive news coming out, actually, with people who have been retraining, people who've been, you know, setting up their own small businesses. Obviously, there has been a lot of job losses as well. But let's just get a bit of an overview from you, David, right now about the market.
Yeah, the Middle East has gone through a bit of a change. I mean, I think nobody expected COVID, and it hit everyone very quickly. And I think what has happened, there have been people that have been let go and have departed, just left the country. But there's still a lot of very good talent here. And I think there are two camps. There are the ones that have gone, right, my job has, you know, been cut. I'm trying to get another job again. I'm going to have to take a cut in my pay to get into a right company. And they've done that. Or there's people that are still waiting out for that job that was the same 12 months ago that is never going to happen again. And unfortunately, what we've seen is a rationalization of salaries across all sectors. I mean, Mackenzie Jones typically handles head office recruitment, so finance, marketing, HR, etc. And we've seen probably a 20% cut in salaries across the board. But that hasn't happened just during COVID. This was happening for probably a year beforehand.
Right.
So the job market is getting better, oddly enough. We've had 2020 was a terrible year for everyone, by the way, and you know, even worse for recruiters. The worst job in the world in 2020, actually. But we've started to see an increase in the amount of roles. So in 2021, we were 40% up in Q1 from Q4 2020. So now they've been a mixture of in the UAE, but also into Saudi, Bahrain, and other areas. So there's been a big shift of talent. Some of the big jobs have moved to Saudi. So that is very much a hot market at the moment.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. And I've just noticed that as well, just from talking to friends and things like that. And it is quite incredible what people will go through. Just as an aside, I mean, we started off talking about robots and will they be replaced. We've also seen a whole shift in how people work, from working from home, Zoom calls, you know, not having to have those face-to-face meetings, not having to fly off and you know, pay that amount on the, you know, and go meet people face-to-face. However, I think there is definitely a need for face-to-face meetings. And I think, having gone through all that for over a year now, people are struggling with it, and I think people really want to get back, maybe not obviously to how much it was before, but you know, just talking to people who I know, someone who was willing to pay an extortionate amount just to get on a plane for 25 minutes down the road, and
that
not
would be
only
me. Yeah.
Oh, you too. Okay. Yeah, and not only that, but you know, gone to complete all the paperwork, got to get PCR tests, willing to sit in a random hotel somewhere and not even know, just so they could get that handshake or the elbow touch or whatever it was, the fist bump, because they felt it was really important that they needed to, you know, be face on to the person that they were going to sign a deal with. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you say you've experienced that as well. I mean, do you foresee that we will get back to how we were before, or it will just people
no, are? No, I think the new world is. I don't think the new world is working from home. I think you've got to remember, human beings are social creatures, and the reality, if you're stuck at home for an awful long time, and I've got a friend who actually works in Abu Dhabi for one of the big construction firms. Again, his name's Chris. He's probably listening, actually, because he does listen.
Hi, Chris.
And he's been at home for a year and a bit, and the poor guy's going stir crazy. So we had a situation at Mackenzie Jones. We have flexible working, so you can work from home whenever you want. You can be in the office, whatever you want to do. We had a point after COVID where we did a survey and said, right, do you want to come back to work, because we were allowed back 50% at the time, or do you want to stay at home? Every single person wanted to come back to work.
Really?
So for the first month or two, they came back, and our productivity increased by about 30%. Not so much in terms of the work output. It was just they felt we're an organization that is very people-centric. The people just wanted human contact. Mm. They wanted to chat about, you know, candidates over the desk. They want to have a coffee with each other. They want to sit down and have a chat. And I think that has now become a situation. We've had more and more clients said, you know, do you mind meeting me face to face? So we don't allow candidates in our office at the moment, because of we just believe that until everyone's had their vaccination, we shouldn't expose candidates or vice versa. But I think last week I did 6 client meetings face to face. And I think people really do want that human contact now. I think they're fed up of staring at people on a screen and, you know, walking out of their home study and being greeted by the cat and, you know, a small dog.
You just don't get that. I mean, particularly in your job, David, as well. I mean, you need to meet people. I think you don't really get the pure essence of someone. I don't think so. Maybe we're just not used to it. I don't know. But over a Zoom call or a phone call,
well,
I think you do need to see them.
Mm. This is a segue back to the automation thing. Yeah. What I do is people pay me for my advice on somebody as an individual. An AI bot, so we use AI, we do actually use it to screen CVs, but what it does, every time you place an advert on LinkedIn, you get about 800 replies. We physically cannot screen that many people, so we use an AI that's called Ocean that basically goes through and screens out on key criteria, mainly location, if they speak Arabic or English, etc. And what we then do is that final shortlist, we then speak to on the phone, on Zoom, or if we can, face-to-face. And that's what my clients pay me for. They pay me for my advice on culture, personality, and skills fit. So at the moment, robots cannot do that.
Yeah.
But they may do in the future. But by then, you know, I'm not going to be around.
You're not going to be around anyway. You're safe. You're safe, David. We've had a number of questions come through. We started off asking you about future-proof jobs with good salaries and if we'll all be replaced by robots. Well, thankfully, you didn't think we were going to be, but you provided some really good advice, I think, for those people who might be slightly worried. And that is to just, you know, just to keep maximizing on the skills that you have. Be on the lookout for ways that you can improve the knowledge and the skills and the expertise that you have all the time, because, you know, you can always improve on how good you are at a job, I think.
Yeah.
We've had a couple of messages come through from our listeners, so it'd be great to get to some of those now if we can. So one has come through anonymous, no name on this one. They say, I am a financial controller in a medium-sized company and I haven't had a pay rise since 2013. How much should I be getting a month? I suppose that's a pretty difficult one to answer. But
well, probably to start from the very beginning, why haven't you had something since 2013? Because if I was in your situation, probably if you've been doing a good job, and the very nature you've been with that business some time, there you must have had reviews, or if you haven't, my suggestion is, and this is a really interesting one, asking for pay reviews now is a very difficult thing, because there are two things people worry about. Is one is that if you're going to ask for money when companies are doing badly, and let's face it, most companies are still struggling out of this, then are you going to be let go because they think you're greedy? Secondly, how do you go about doing it, which is a very difficult one? And the third thing, if they turn you down, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
So there are three questions you've got to ask yourself. I think this individual needs to probably understand why he hasn't been given a pay review and probably sit down with his line manager and have a very open discussion about this.
And it's good advice. Just staying on this subject, though, because we have had another message come through from Mariella asking, is it wise to negotiate your salary during the pandemic? Bosses don't need that headache and we'll probably get someone on a lower salary. And you just really answered that. But if you needed to at this time, and let's say you were in a company that was doing okay, would you advise to do so or just still wait?
Well, you've got to remember there are two things. First of all, one is that you want to support your company. So there is a way of doing this properly. And one of the things to do is go and see your boss and say, one of the things you should always do when you join a company is ask for quarterly reviews. And that's not a pay review. That's a review on how you've been doing. Because I always say to my consultants, right, I'm going to set you tasks I want you to achieve, but I want you to set me tasks you want to achieve as well. And at the end of that, we'll be able to assess how each other's done. And I think if you go into your boss now in this difficult time and say, look, I want to say I'm really supportive of this company. I want to be here for a lot longer, but I'd like to be in a situation where I've achieved these things. I'd like my salary to be reviewed at some stage. And I know this is probably not the best time, but can we put a date or a time in the diary to sit down and discuss this? And it doesn't necessarily mean I want to pay rise now, but I'd like to be in a position where if I can hit certain targets and help you become more successful as a company, I'd like to be rewarded. So what you're doing there is you're sharing the success that you have and you want something back in return. And I don't think that's an unreasonable thing to ask. Now, what your boss could say to you is, look, we are really in a bad situation at the moment. We really like you. We really want you. Can you bear with me and let's sit down and review that and I'll give you a date in the future? That's absolutely perfect.
Yeah, great advice there. Thanks very much. Hope that's helped you, Ariella. Let's get to some more of these messages now. Binny M says, I love my job, but because of people being put on unpaid leave, I'm having to do other people's work too. Should this reflect in my contract? Oh, that's a really good one, actually. I think that's happened to a number of people, actually, where the job load has doubled probably because of layoffs in particular companies.
I can't give him legal advice on that because I'm not qualified to do that. But think of it this way, is they've let people go and they've kept you. They must see huge value in you. And at some stage, we're going to come out of this. I know everyone doesn't think that, but we will be out of it at some point. And it's getting better. So I think what everyone has to do is just literally do as much as they can to help, A, their company survive, but secondly, put as much effort in from their own ability they can. Because when we come out of this, people remember the people that have helped them through it, and there will be bigger jobs, bigger salary increases, etc. But again, this goes back to the thing is you need to sit down with your boss and have a discussion with them, because often they'll just think you're doing a great job and they don't know how much stress you're under. So you can share that. That's not an issue. But you, every time you sit down with your boss, you're talking to them about your commitment to their company. And I think that is a huge thing. I've got my guys that have stuck with me throughout this crisis, and yet we stuck by them. And I think as it gets better, you know, you're in it together in many ways. So sometimes, you know, you have to do two people's jobs. Unfortunately, that's fact.
Yeah. No, I think you're absolutely right. And hopefully, if the employee is you know, a decent employer, then they will understand that, and they're sticking by you by keeping your job.
Absolutely. Yeah.
David, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program. Thanks for sharing your advice with everyone this afternoon. Thanks very much, and all the very best to you.
Thank you very much.
David McKenzie there, Group Managing Director of McKenzie Jones Group.
Life Balance on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Good afternoon. We're talking next with our wonderful job seeker, Teresa Dutoit. Every week, what we do is we connect our listeners or someone who is looking for a job with, hopefully, a company who is looking to fill a position. And today, we're joined by Teresa Dutoit. Teresa, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us.
Good afternoon.
So, Teresa, Fantastic. Tell us a little bit about yourself and the position that you are looking for.
Well, just moved here recently from South Africa. My career path has been HR for quite a while, about 15 years. I understand here in Dubai, it's quite hectic to find employment due to you have to have like a certain degree and stuff. I have my own a human resource management diploma back in South Africa, and then the 15 plus years hands-on experience. And I recently done a short course in UAE labor law to understand it a bit better. But that's still not what the employment market wants. They want that degree, and it's a bit difficult for me. And then I said, well, I will even go do intern work just to get the basic experience. Yeah. But do you think you can get it? No. I'm not a youngster, an entry-level youngster. I'm a mature lady with like a fire in my belly. I can do the work. I'm the reliable, responsible person. And I want to work. Yeah. It's not that I have to, but I want to work. Because today it's like to sit at home and twiddle-dee, twiddle-dum, it's just not me. It's like I'm one of those people who want to work
and
learn.
You want to get out there and work, yeah.
And
well,
get the full experience.
Yeah. And so let's take a little look at what kind of position that you feel would work for you. You've had, as you said, many years' experience in various different fields, but there in South Africa. It seems like you've worked quite a lot in the finance, in payroll. Would you like to go back to something like that, or are you looking for something a bit more challenging or something slightly different from what your experience is?
Well, I would like to start administratively, and HR and payroll is that.
Yeah.
I'm willing to expand my view and try something new. I'm willing to start lower and then work my way up. And that's it. I'm actually researching currently on health and safety courses that I can do, because on the three job sites that I am, I see they advertise quite a lot of health and safety. So I'm researching which company to go with or a course that will suit my needs. And so, yeah, I'm open to anything as long as it will keep me busy. I cannot sit idle at work and yeah. wait for something to happen where I can apply my knowledge and implement a system where it needs be, if it's needed. And let's just go from explore and work and get the job done.
It sounds like, I mean, you've definitely, I've never met you, but just talking to you on the phone, it sounds you've got a really positive energy. You're ready to work. You've got the experience. You have I think, you know, that the experience that comes also from our age, as you said, you're 45, you've had over 27 years experience, you're committed, you are reliable, all those wonderful qualities that I'm sure employers are looking for right now. So if you think, if there's someone listening today from a company who has a position to fill, administrative-oriented position, payroll position, and you think that Teresa might be the person for you, then please do get in touch with the programme. Text in on 4001. Please do put your name on there as well. And what we can do, we can connect you with Teresa. Teresa, thank you very much. And I really wish you all the very best today. And I hope I'm really going to push it. And I hope someone will come back to us and we can connect you and find you that position that you're looking for. Thanks so much.
Oh, Siobhan, that's so awesome. Thank you so much for doing this for all the people. There are so many people out there that is looking for a work.
Yeah.
And it will help. This helps a lot.
I think so too. You know, just going down different avenues as always. You never know who's listening. Teresa,
awesome.
All the very best.
Thank you so much. Have a good afternoon. You too.
Okay, bye now. Bye. That's Teresa Dutoit there. Now, as I said, if you do think that you have a position that Teresa would be perfect to fill, again, please text in and let us know, and we will connect you. 4001, that is our text message number. Do put your name on all of those messages as well.
Life Balance on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Good afternoon. Well, up next, where is the best place to work in the UAE? Well, the annual report is out. It's been compiled by a management consultancy, Great Place to Work. Now, but what makes a great place to work? Is it just the salary? Maybe it's the people, or maybe it's something more. Well, I'm joined now by Ibrahim Mugharbel, who is the Managing Director of the UAE, Qatar, Oman and Kuwait at Great Place to Work Middle East. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us, Ibrahim.
Good afternoon, and thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. So it's out, the annual report, and some interesting companies on there, as always. Let's, if we can, take a more detailed look at it. Perhaps you could talk to us a little bit about some of those companies on there.
Sure thing. So as you said it correctly, we have revealed the best top 45 workplaces in the UAE. We do understand it was a tough year. It was not the easiest year for all the organizations, not just in the UAE, around the globe as well. But we took that into consideration. We took into consideration the heroic action of any organization, how they focused on their culture, how they were able to evolve their culture, how they were able to save and protect their employees. And we actually gave that a 60% of the overall ranking. We also kept a 40% as well for the Trust Index, which is a survey that we send to the employees for their input, for their perception, and for their experience as well.
Mm.
So if I want to summarize what we looked at, I'm going to say the action that the leaders took to overcome the challenge of COVID while focusing on all employees' well-being and maintaining the business resilience as well.
Right. So you do look at a number of different things. There's a lot of different factors that you take into place. Now, it's interesting because Great Places to Work has been around for over 30 years. It's changed a lot, hasn't it? I would imagine in 30 years, what employers and employees want or expect from their employees and vice versa, etc. You've surveyed over 100 million employees. So, as I said, I think you must have a really great insight into workplace cultures and best practices. Perhaps you can share some of those insights with us today. I mean, what works, what doesn't work that you've found looking at this latest survey that which has just recently come out?
Sure. And we are a great place to work. We are the global authority for workplace culture. We exist in 60 countries and we speak to more than 20,000 organizations and to millions and millions of employees around the globe. And this has actually helped us understand how we can support and evolve our business model to support organizations. And as you have said correctly, we work with these organizations to evolve what we look at in terms of business model. As an example, we recently added the innovation element because it plays a key role in the evolution of any culture and the trust and performance of any employee in any organization. So that being said, looking at COVID-19 and looking what happened in 2020, what were the key things we have seen in terms of leaders and what they were looking at? Safety was a crucial aspect for employee well-being, supporting employees, their families, financially, mentally as well, making sure that employees, due to working from home, not even able to join the office or come to the office, to develop a sense of belonging and providing them with stability.
Mm-hmm.
Communication was IT across all different levels, across all the different managements and employees and different departments as well. The special care that was given to the frontliners, because they were risking their lives when we're speaking about construction or hospitality, when we're speaking about retail as well. So appreciating their efforts and making sure that they always say thank you to them as part of the process as well. In the end, we're all on this together. So giving back to the community was a huge part of the heroic actions that Pfizer took during the COVID-19.
Yeah, well, thanks so much. I mean, that's really interesting, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, it sounds like the criteria has probably changed or been added to quite a lot just because of, as you mentioned, of the pandemic, with the communication obviously playing a massive role between the employees and the employers. What stood, though, some of the companies apart from others in terms of being a great place to work?
100%. In the end, I know the criteria has changed, but the objective was one, to create a high trust and a high performing culture while maintaining safety and well-being and the business resilience, because we do understand that the pandemic was a universal challenge. However, how can you maintain that resilience? How can you maintain that continuity? I'm going to talk about the top five as an example, right?
Yeah.
So the winner or the top hero of the UAE Best Workplaces 2021 is the one. So one of the key things that I would like to speak about, the one, the constant communication the CEO had with the organization reflected well on the feedback that he received from the employees. Communication was so strong in that organization, so they created an email that was only addressing the inquiries about COVID. It was never used. And this is actually a great testimonial for this organization and why they were at the top one on that list.
And communication, you mean, so it wasn't just sending emails out, it was actually getting people together. Obviously, we were limited in that doing that as well, of getting people together. But I don't know if you know this information or not, but is there any other details you can share with us as to how they did that and how they really did prove to be a great place to work?
Sure thing. So basically answering all the uncertainties, right? As an employee, you were not going to the office, you were not able to talk or to interact with other employees and with other team members. So how can you make sure that people are feeling very confident and feeling very certain about the future because of all what's happening around us? And speaking about that, DHL Express, which is number two on the list, has done it really well. They were able to answer all these uncertainties and all these ambiguities by a clear vision and an understanding of the situation and basically holding the hands of the employees virtually, taking into consideration the social
distancing,
to make sure that they are moving ahead and moving forward with the process. Mm-hmm. And the same goes for the other organization and all the 45 organizations as well. Each one of them has done different things, but in the end, they had one objective, is how to support our people and putting our people at first.
Yeah. You know, I do wonder sometimes if those heads of big companies actually, you know, call themselves up. That sounds strange. I'm just thinking of an example the other day. I'm not going to say who it was, I'm not going to say which company it was or whatever. But I called up a company and it was absolutely terrible. They put me through to the wrong person. I kept getting cut off because the phone machines didn't work. Then I got put through again. Oh, I won't go through it because it absolutely drove me mad in the end. Then I got put through to a call center in another country where I couldn't hear properly. And it just went on. And this is, you know, a top, top multinational company. And I just do wonder sometimes, someone from the top management, if they just phone up themselves and they would have a really good insight, I think, into the company, don't you think? Rather than, you know, maybe putting all these great managerial ideas and concepts in place. I think just really getting down to the grassroots of what the company is and who your employees are and how it works can give you a great insight into your own company.
100%. I agree with you. And this is why Great Place to Work is all about Great Place to Work for All. That's our methodology. So each member, each employee in this organization matters. So from your experience, as an example, it's the receptionist or the person who's the call center. So each member is an ambassador of this organization. And this is where we say the consistency of results. Each employee in that organization has to have a great experience because it's not just about the managers or the top management. It's about the frontliners. It's about the people who are there working and doing their best. When you look at innovation, we actually call it innovation by all. It's not the CEO who's going to drive the business. It's not the GM. It's actually the people who's going to be innovative to overcome any challenge or any business challenge.
Yeah. It has been challenging times, hasn't it, for so many companies and employers and employees. So, you know, it's really good that I think that you're doing this, I think, in many ways, because it gives a boost to those employers who have really stood by their employees and are doing their utmost. And you, I think you called them heroes before, is that right?
100%. We're calling them heroes. And actually the hashtags were my company, my hero, and heroes among us.
Yeah. Let's take a little bit about companies themselves. I mean, it's shifting their focus. I think, as you mentioned earlier as well, so instead of spending on physical space, which is not necessarily so in demand right now, focusing on benefits such as health and wellness, on mental health, on, you know, looking at safety and security of their employees. Let's go back. Do you mention two of the top companies that have won, which was The One and the other one was DHL? Perhaps you can just take us through a couple more of those companies.
Sure thing. And actually, just to continue what you just said about in terms of what are so important to focus on or what are the key elements outside the listening strategy. And this is actually what we're talking about, the organization. You need to be able to listen to your employees. So instead of spending budget on a physical space or any other initiative, actually spend budget on listening to your people. Activate your listening strategy for you to be able to have a solid and a strong business strategy, so you're able to move forward with your business evolution and resilience as well. So I can speak as well about number three, and actually number three on the best workplaces is a first timer in the list, Shahub Group.
Okay.
This company have actually a workplace culture that is well defined. Their constant internal communication, their transparency has been a key ingredient in their growth and progress as well. So they were always continuously connecting and recognizing employees in terms of how can you do the extra mile to support other employees as well. So giving back to each other internally as well. Five Hotels, which is number four on the list as well, the dedication that they had, because, you know, they are operating in hospitality, and this is one of the toughest sectors that they suffered during COVID. So they had maybe some salary cut, but what they have done instead of that, they wanted people to keep their job. So they did some restructuring to make sure that everybody is busy while making sure that there is always food on the table. So that's what they had in terms of an objective. Looking at number five, which is also on the hospitality sector, which is Hilton, they meant it to make sure that everybody is trained and developed in terms of understanding the wellness, to be able to survive COVID as well, and to be able to continue with your life, because mentally, not everybody was feeling well. So they wanted to make sure that everybody was so empowered so they can achieve their very best. And this is actually what made these five companies, DHL Express, The One, Shahub Group, Five Hotel and Hilton, being top on the 45 best workplaces.
It's interesting because a lot of them, well, DHL, the hotel groups and Shahub, they're all pretty big companies. The One is probably one of the smaller companies, I would imagine, out of that five. I mean, we can't go through all 45 today, sadly, but did you sort of ensure that it was, you know, across the board from the small companies to the large companies to the multinational companies? How, you know, is it quite diverse, the companies within that 45?
100%. And actually, The One, as you have said, they're smaller, they're medium, they're SMEs, but they were able to be number one. And this is the question I receive every time from a company who entered the program. We're so small, how are we competing with the multinationals? And actually what my answer to them, and my answer is always, we focus on the culture. Size matters, but our objective is to see and assess your culture. And this is why The One was number one on that list as an example. So we take into consideration the size of the organization. However, our main focus was, or during COVID at least, on the industry, on the culture, on the, how did they overcome the challenge of COVID, how they were able to put their people first when they were doing any business resilience activities.
Yeah. Can anything else you'd like to add, Ibrahim? And where can we get hold of this report? Can we find out, and two questions, where can we get hold of it? And also, when do you start for the next year?
Thank you so much. So basically, as we move forward with our process, so we just celebrated the UBS Workplaces, that you can find it on our website, www.greatplacetowork.me. And actually, there's other lists coming up, and you should be very excited about it. So we're talking about the best workplaces for women in GCC, best workplaces for millennials in GCC, best workplaces for UAE nationals, best workplaces in different sectors as well in GCC, and best workplaces for Emiratis.
Okay.
So it's going to be a very exciting year for us as we move forward with our process and actually recognize the different heroes in all these different categories and in all these local and regional lists as well.
Fantastic. Thanks so much for sharing that with us today, and all the very best to you, Ibrahim. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Ibrahim Rugobal there, Managing Director, UAE Qatar Oman and Kuwait at Great Place to Work Middle East.
This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Join the conversation
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Up next, I'm going to be finding out about how to stay safe online. Keep yourself up to date and make sure you've got all your downloads in place. We're going to be chatting to a senior security researcher at Kaspersky.
Life Balance on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Good afternoon, Maha. Maha Yamut, Senior Security Researcher at Kaspersky, is on the line with us today. How are you?
Good afternoon. I'm good. How are you?
Good, thanks. Yeah, I think this is really important, actually, to topic to be discussing today, I should say, with so many people still working from home and, of course, using their company laptops or not at all even, and downloading apps, webcams, etc., ways to communicate and chat with people, not just in the UAE, but overseas as well. Everybody's doing it, but is everybody sure about what they're doing? Are they all up to date with their security settings? So, Maha, let's get some questions to you. I mean, how do we ensure that a company devices, which include like mobiles and laptops, should be equipped with the appropriate security software?
Right. Important question, to be honest, especially in these times. So obviously, the work laptop or the work device should be and remain a work device, meaning you shouldn't be installing applications and software. You shouldn't be. And especially like for personal use, obviously, if you are working in a corporate environment, they usually have policies, security policies, and even IT policies on what you can install and when you cannot. And I know some people you just mentioned, like some individuals will be using, don't have even a personal laptop, yeah, and they will be using work laptops and work devices for personal use. Well, there goes the likelihood of getting something infecting, an infection or a virus infection, and getting your data out.
And so basically, I mean, the answer is, I suppose, just don't download anything that you don't know what it is, or don't download anything onto your own, not your personal, but your work laptop. But many, you have to in many cases, because you might have to have a conversation on Microsoft Teams. You might have to connect with someone in another country somehow. So you might have to. So, but what would be some of the things that you have to ensure if that is the case, that you have to do that?
So in the general sense, like, again, corporate environments do have these softwares installed, or even if they didn't have them installed, they are now, because they are needed for remote connectivities, for remote collaboration, and so on. So obviously, they will install these applications, but at the end of the day, we should ensure like they are used in the way they should, meaning if you don't use them, just close them. Even when you're using them, ensure they are getting access to the minimum privileges and so on. So that, I mean, I'm sure you've heard of it before, like some people will leave their microphone on and then somebody, well, they leave the call on and then, you know, what happens? Like somebody by mistake will listen into their private conversations and so on.
Yeah.
And same goes for the video, for the webcam.
Yeah, I mean, we've already seen also on the news some mishaps from someone turning into a cat, someone being upside down, and there's been
Absolutely.
Many more. And I think even a lot of colleagues and friends can share slight mishaps that they've had themselves. We're all getting mm-hmm. used to this. You know, it's not something that we're used to. So it's something new for everybody, isn't it? And ensuring mm-hmm. that your background is very PC as well, all these sorts of things. And I think, well, after a year of it, I suppose many of us have got used to it now, or are a bit more confident in what we're doing online and how we're doing it, etc. But there are still lots of things that you need to be aware of, aren't there? Let's go through some of those if we can. And I think another one, actually, which is really important, is Wi-Fi security, which you've been talking about now, is that, you know, you might not be at home. You might go to an open, a public hotspot. You might go to a coffee shop. What are some of the things that you need to ensure that you're doing if you are going logging onto like a public Wi-Fi?
Right. So when using public Wi-Fi, there's also a risk. There's always a risk that someone nearby will collect your private information and sensitive information. And we have seen advanced persistent threat actors doing so. Like they just wait at hotels and deliver malware to you through the insecure Wi-Fi. Now, if you have to use insecure Wi-Fi at hotels or public hotspots, you can just connect through a VPN to your corporate environment or to your home network and then use the internet through that unsecure medium. So there are ways to secure that traffic.
Would you recommend getting a VPN then? I mean, I know they're not, am I right in saying they're not available just for public use or sort of private use, I should say, but you can get them through business?
So, absolutely. I mean, if you are using it for business purposes, it's allowed. And every company nowadays, whether it be company, whether it be government, banking, and so on, everyone has VPN to connect to their corporate networks. So you can just use that facility to public hotspots and public Wi-Fi and connect to your corporate environment and secure your transactions, your data and traffic.
Now, this is slightly off topic, but I'm just really curious. You said someone that might deliver malware to your system, and why do people do that? I mean, I get it that they can take your information. I mean, they can take all they want. There's nothing I have on my computer, you know, that's really of any great interest. Obviously, I get it that if it's a CEO or an accounts or those sorts of things, this is obviously secure information. You do not want to be sharing that with anyone else. But for the general, day-to-day person, is it just for the fun of it that people do, that hackers do it or that give you malware, whatever it is? What are some of the main reasons why people would do that to you?
Fantastic question, to be honest. I mean, and that question we used to have, like, and conferences and so on. And what we say, like, it depends on the victim. It depends on the target, even. It depends on the attacker. And why is that? Because different threat actors have different motives. So, for example, if there's an advanced persistent threat actor who wants to get into your corporate environment, well, obviously they need to get into one of the remote workers or remote individuals. So even if it's a normal person, at least he thinks so, he has access to certain services, to certain corporate environment, to certain data. So it depends. Cyber criminals, for example, they will just get into your environment or your computer to monetize your data, to monetize your system resources. So it's really depending on the threat actor and their motives. But
It makes it even scarier, because in that way you're saying it's very targeted.
Yeah. I mean, it depends again. Because if it's being targeted, it means they are determined to get into your corporate environment through your device. Because who knows, you are an unsuspected user and you just click on anything. But on the other hand, if a cyber criminal wants to monetize your data, most of the time cyber criminals are spreading scams and spams. So you are not targeted per se, as a person, but your device, because somehow it got infected.
Just a final question for you, Maha. Would we always know if we had some malware in our system, or if we had been hacked or something like that, or could it possibly be that we don't know?
Well, in the general sense, you wouldn't expect the virus to knock on your device and say, "Hey, I infected your machine." So, in general, like, and most of the time, people wouldn't know. And especially like even a phishing email. So when someone sends you a scam email and then asks you for some data or to click on a link to open an attachment, And most of the time, they have done their job to make it stealthy. And the endpoint security, in turn, if it's able to detect it, they will block it in the background and they will notify you. But if it's a persistent threat actor and they have a new virus, a new malware to target you or your company, you wouldn't see it until at the last stage of the infection.
So final words from yourself, Maha, just to your sort of online safety motto, if you want to call it that, for our listeners today.
Prevention is ideal, but detection is a must.
Yeah.
So you cannot prevent everything, but at least try to detect it. Try to be aware of the newest trends in targeting and hacking. And therefore, you don't click on anything or don't open attachments from unknown people or from unknown sources, and be vigilant on the internet.
Mm. And make sure your security settings are always up to date. Don't ignore it like I do sometimes.
Absolutely.
Act on it rather than getting spammed or whatever it is.
As possible.
Yeah. Great advice there today. Thank you so much for joining us, Maha. Maha Yamut is the Senior Security Researcher at Kaspersky. Did it again.
Life Balance on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Good afternoon. I'm Siobhan Leydon. I'm sitting in for Helen today. And coming up next, I'll be helping you find your ikigai. Well, what is that, you may be asking yourself? Well, it's the Japanese idea that says to achieve the best life, you must find a career that helps the world, makes you happy and fulfilled, and you must also get paid for it. Well, that sounds pretty unreachable, doesn't it? But I'm joined now by Zach Holtz, founder of the Happiest Teacher blog, who, so he says, has found his. And I'll be finding out how. Zach, great to speak to you today. Thank you very much for joining us. How are you? How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Thank you so much for having me on.
It's an absolute pleasure. Now, you are currently in China, aren't you? You're teaching there at an international school.
Yes, ma'am. Absolutely. I've been teaching for about 16 years now, and I've been teaching in 5 countries. I was just in Dubai for the last 5 years, which is where I started the Happiest Teacher, and now I am back in China.
Wonderful. That's right. 16 years teaching in classrooms. But you've also worked various side hustles, which we'll get into a little bit later on, from writing to playing in bands and tutoring. Now, I've got to ask you, have you found your ikigai?
Oh, absolutely. And I knew it the moment I stepped into a classroom when I was 20 years old. I was doing my TEFL certification, which is teaching English as a foreign language. I was so excited to get in front of the class and teach my first class. And whereas I talked to the other students who were doing the same thing, and they were scared, they were nervous, they were hesitant, they didn't know what they were doing. But for me, I just felt totally natural in front of the class. And I knew from the first moment that this is what I wanted to do. And then I've added on to that in various ways. I've just opened my side hustles. I started a photography business in Bahrain where I was teaching photography and doing photography for corporate clients. I'm writing for the newspaper now. I've tutored. I played in bands all through the UAE for 5 years doing that. And those are like nice little side dishes. But the main entree, the ikigai, is teaching and being in the classroom and being with students especially. I take that job very seriously and I love it. And, you know, it's almost sacred to me, this ability to connect with students and help improve their lives and be somebody that they can talk to and who will listen to them and let them know that their ideas are valuable and expose them to great works of art and all these great things that you get to do as a teacher. And it's something that's really special, and I can't see any reason to give it up.
Gosh, that sounds amazing. I mean, I would say, first of all, you are so lucky to have found what you really and truly love. As they say, if you do what you love and you love what you do, you feel you've never worked a day in your life. And I think for many, it's actually quite rare to find that. You didn't. It wasn't immediate, though, was it? I mean, having read a little bit about you, you've worked in fast food places. You've worked in Christmas trees, packing, loading Christmas trees, I understand, as when you were very young. It was a path that you went along, really. It was almost like a process of elimination, it seemed. Like you knew what you didn't want to do until it was that you found that you wanted to do. Is that right?
Absolutely. And before that, I was pre-med in college. I was planning on being an orthodontist. I was a physics major. You know, all these things that I was trying all these things, and I was fine at them, and I could have seen myself doing them you know, and being, you know, satisfied with life. But I was decent at the material. I just didn't really have a passion for it. And so I kept trying new things, like you said. And some I enjoyed. Like, I enjoyed retail. I enjoy working in offices at certain points in my life. And, you know, but at the same time, and I enjoyed being an Uber driver even. But the only one that really made me know that this is what I wanted to do for the rest of my life was teaching overseas.
May I ask you, without being rude, Zach, how old were you when you found your ikigai, when you found your passion, which was teaching?
I was 20. Yeah.
So you were quite young then.
Certification. Absolutely. Yeah. But I mean, I've been working since I was 11. You know, so I had an opportunity to try a various number of jobs, and not big careers for the most part, mostly just, you know, part-time work. But at the same time, you know, it allowed me to get a taste of what it was and allowed me to know whether those were things I wanted to do. And that's really the heart of my advice for other people is you have to be able to try new things.
Mm.
And a lot of that comes down to opportunity and confidence and belief in yourself. Because, you know, if you don't have the opportunity to try new things because you're in a bad financial situation, you're taking care of people, you know, a lot of those things that happen in this world, then you might not have the opportunity to try enough things that you find what you're supposed to be doing in this world. And I think a lot of people are in that boat. And I know a lot of teachers that are that way, which is really sad to me. You know, they teach because they haven't figured out what else they want to do, you know, and I think that's just such a waste.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely invaluable, that opportunity and confidence, most definitely. You know, just sort of going off track from some of the questions now, but I'm quite curious to ask you about the whole education system as it stands today. And there is, I think, a great pressure to, you know, push students down certain routes at a very young age to choose their GCSEs and then their A-levels and then their degrees. And you're kind of limiting in many ways opportunities, potential opportunities.
Absolutely. I think the British system is particularly egregious at that. The American system has a lot of problems, but they don't limit you quite as much as the British system does, which really tracks you down and makes you only do very limited number of subjects. Whereas the American system, especially once you get to university, it opens you up to new things. You have to take distribution requirements, and you know, you're not just taking the classes in your major. And I think that is a strength in terms of finding out what you want to do and what you like studying and like what you like spending your time doing.
Yeah.
If you only are able to take one subject that you picked when you were 16 or 17, what are the odds that that's actually going to be the topic that you actually want to do when you haven't experienced all those other things?
Yeah, or even had any work experience in those areas as well. I mean, let's translate that a little bit now to those who are already working, who are perhaps a little bit older. And as we know, the pandemic has actually, for some, been an amazing opportunity to take stock of work and life. And some have had the opportunity to retrain or just change their job completely, having been forced to do so or doing it willingly. Now, in times of great change and stress, it's interesting how people react. Have you noticed this?
The reaction to the stress? Have I noticed that?
Yeah, the reaction to change and being forced to do it or just rethinking things.
I think we're creatures of habit, you know, to a large extent. Like, we do what we've always done because we've always done it, and it takes the least amount of energy and thought. And so that can really make change very, very difficult for almost everyone. And especially in a stressful situation, I think most people will latch on to what they know is successful, even if it's not successful anymore due to, you know, varying situations and changing circumstances around the globe. And I think for so many, that's been just devastating. You know, a lot of people weren't prepared for the pandemic in that they didn't have, you know, an emergency fund. They didn't have good resources that they could draw on if they did lose their job. They were living, paycheck to paycheck for whatever reason. Sometimes that's because that's all they can afford and they're supporting a lot of people. Sometimes it's because their lifestyle is too expensive and they've never learned to control their expenses. You know, so there's a lot of different reasons for it. But, you know, I hope that people were able to take stock and make the changes that they needed to survive this pandemic and come through the other side. And I hope they were able to take advantage of the opportunity that was the chaos, that is the chaos of the situation.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I think for a lot of people, that's going to be really, really hard. And I'm lucky that, you know, my field stayed intact. You know, education's still a thing. But, you know, my brother is an actor at theaters, and, you know, that's really hurt him. And, you know, I know other people that are in entertainment or hospitality or travel, and, you know, their industry is just gutted. That's really sad. But I hope that they can use this as an opportunity to change to something that want to do if they felt like they were in the rut before. You know, never let a crisis go to waste, right?
much.
Yeah, absolutely.
Life Balance on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Good afternoon. I'm joined by Zach Holtz, who's the founder of the Happiest Teacher blog, who has been in education for over 16 years. He has found his ikigai. That's what we started off talking to him about, which is the Japanese idea that says to achieve the best life, you must find a career that helps the world, makes you happy and fulfilled, and you get paid for it. Sounds pretty unreachable, but yep, Zach has found his, but not through, you know, trial and error himself. He's found his passion and is absolutely enjoying doing what he does. But Zach, let's bring you in. And we did mention just before the break there about, you know, we are in a pandemic. There have been many people who have lost their jobs, sadly, tragically, and maybe, you know, those that are struggling to find new paths in lives, to find their new purpose. Is there any advice or tips or things that you might like to share with us today that could help people or get people back on track?
I think one key idea is to think about your talent stack. And a talent stack is what makes special and valuable in terms of the workforce and the jobs that you do and the hobbies that you have even. So like, let's say for me, I have been writing for a long time. And just as, you know, as a student, as a teacher, I've been editing a lot of writing throughout the years, both as a student and as a teacher. And then, you know, I got obsessed with personal finance and I started to write about personal finance. So I took those two talents and turned them into something that happened on my blog, and then that gave me a lot of other opportunities, like writing for the National, like where you saw the article, you know, or for example, when I started that photography education business, you know, I had been a teacher for a while at that point, but I learned photography and I was sharing my pictures and people wanted to know how to do that. And so my friend and I, who are both teachers, we started a photography business that was running for years in Bahrain when we lived there. You know, so you take those things that you're good at and you combine them into something unique. And if you're able to do that, you might be able to already find your ikigai, because you might already know the things that you're talented at, that you're interested in. And if you combine them in certain unique ways, it takes some introspection. Mm-hmm. There's not a point A, point B, point C necessarily direct line, but, you know, I always think of it as, what are you curious about? And use that curiosity to drive your obsession. And then you start creating things in that space, whatever that space may be. And you put that out in the world and you get feedback and you improve, but then other people take notice of it. And then, you know, you start creating things that are good enough that people pay you for it. And that takes time. Yeah. But I've done it multiple times in my life, and I know a lot of people that have done it the same way. So you use your curiosity to become obsessed and then start creating and putting it out in the world and, you know, get good enough that you're creating something of value that people will pay for.
You're absolutely right. I think curiosity is absolutely key, isn't it? And it's interesting, again, I suppose it also reflects just what we touched on earlier about education, is that we are multidimensional people. No person is just one thing. And even though we might have to, you know, we might have been pushed down those holes through our education or maybe in our families, but human beings are multidimensional, and you don't just have to be one thing, do you? There are so many other things that you can do, even if it's just a hobby, or you can retrain. There are so many courses and free online courses as well that are very much readily available. I'm conscious of time, Zach, but I would love to ask you what's next for you. You're currently teaching in China and really enjoying it. Any future plans for you? What's next for you?
Well, I want to stick here in Checo and Shenzhen for a while. I really like it here. But eventually, I kind of want to do this kind of crazy idea of creating a resort where you go and you learn how to straighten out your finances, you learn how to straighten out your nutrition. There's a lot of yoga involved. And basically, it's like a vacation that's profitable for you. And it'll be hammocks. So that's the long-term goal at this point.
I think that sounds absolutely fabulous. Give us a shout when it's ready, because I know a lot of people who'll want to go.
great
idea. Yeah, retraining, just getting yourself on track, back on track, and finding those things, finding your ikigai, rebuilding your curiosity in life, and also checking out your talent stack, all those things that you've mentioned.
Yep.
Zach, it's been wonderful to talk to you today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on. And, you know, my heart goes out to anybody in a tough situation, but, you know, there's light at the end of the tunnel. If you just keep trying new things and, you know, make the best of it, use this opportunity to learn and grow.
Thanks so much. And if you want to find out more and read more about what Zach is up to, then, of course, you can also check out the Happiest Teacher blog. It's full of great information and really positive news and insights. Zach Holtz, it's been a pleasure. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Work-Life Balance on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Good afternoon. I'm Siobhan Naden. I'm filling in for Helen today. And I have a question. Are you working from home? Do you find it hard to switch off your work mode at the end of the day? Well, the lines between work life and private life have become ever more blurred since the pandemic. How do you create boundaries then between the two? Well, I'm happy to be joined now by Roger Schachtura, who is the founder of Reconnect, a mental strength and wellness platform, which in fact was also founded during the pandemic. Roger, great to have you on the line with us today. Now, you have an interesting background. You had a 15-year financial career, I understand, across the UAE, Bahrain and Lebanon, and are now among some of the startup seeds during the pandemic. Can you tell me about Reconnect and how it came about?
Great. Thank you for having me. I am actually disconnecting today from the beach in JBR. I brought my laptop here. I brought my phone. So if I feel like I need to disconnect to reconnect, I come to the beach or whatever, a garden. So this is one of the main things you were talking about.
Yeah.
Is how do we disconnect when we're working from home? How do we create our own routine? So Reconnect, well, I actually come from a marketing background. I worked with multinationals in Dubai, in Bahrain, and in Lebanon. And I had a career of 15 years. Now, how Reconnect came about is actually I was reaching points of crashing and burnouts in my corporate life. And it was like literally out of my own hands, not managing my own routines, not living a healthy lifestyle. And, you know, extreme working hours, like, you name it. I mean, we all go through this, so I'm sure a lot of people can relate. But it really burnt me out to a really dangerous degree, and that really resulted in a divorce and a loss of financial stability, loss of jobs. It landed me also in mental care, and it was really a very dramatic, I would say, experience for the last 3 years. And I came back to Dubai last March, and the next day COVID started, like the COVID, what's it called, lockdown. And it was like just another disaster, right? But for me, like, I guess it was like a blessing. Like, I spent the first 6 months trying to find a job, but, you know, everyone was losing jobs. So I had to figure it out. Like, what is it that I want to do? What is my calling? What is my purpose? And these questions started coming. And at the same time, I started rebuilding my health, my physical health, educating myself, understand what happened to me from the mental health side. And when I understood, I turned that mental health into mental strength. And really, like, I just spent time rebuilding you know, rebuilding myself and finding out what is it that I want to achieve. And Reconnect came as a result of the last 10 months of consistent work and communication with amazing practitioners and brands and a lot of really what we call empathetic therapists as well. Because, I mean, we're really lucky to be in a place where in the UAE where things are regulated and people do things from, you know, a human angle when it comes to mental health.
Roger, thank you so much for sharing your story with us today. And, you know, I'm so sorry to have heard about really the journey that you did go to. But, I mean, great to hear that you have come out the other end and it has been, you know, you've retrained, you've repurposed your career, you've put all that experience over 15 years, as you mentioned, working in various different countries around the Middle East to this fantastic new career, this new new side of you, I suppose, that's come out now. It's called Reconnect, and it's called. Yeah. I love the way that you say it, you have to disconnect before you reconnect, don't you?
Yeah.
Is that, do you really feel that that is the starting point for many, where you, really you have to just stop first of all before you can start again?
Yes. I mean, look, I think COVID made us all somehow do it because we really had to rethink everything. For me, it started way before that because I was put in situations that I'm not accustomed to. I was on a roller, like I would say, on a beautiful ride in the career side. Like, things were going so well for me, but then everything went away, you know? Like, it was really such a destructive kind of experience, and you lose like everything you've worked for and built for so many years. And that gets you into a questioning phase. And the questioning phase, like, you really have to question everything that you were doing in your life. And does it serve you? How did it harm you? How did it make you better? And everything has a positive and a negative. So I think with disconnecting, you, like, in a sense, you sit with yourself. You know, you could do it through meditation. You could do it through dancing. You could do it through travel. You can do it through expressing. Like, there are so many ways that you can find that are suitable for you. But I think it comes out of, like, what the question of who am I and what do I love? And then pursuing who you are and who you and what you love, like, regardless of what anybody tells you, because ultimately, you know, like, I think we do a lot based, like, a part of, like, our disconnection is always actually, like, doing what everybody expects us to do rather than what we want to do. For me, COVID was a blessing because it put me with myself, beating me and asking me the questions, like, so what do you want to do, Roger? Like, what are you going to do? Like, what are you going to do for your daughter? What are you going to do for yourself? What are you going to do for,
it's quite,
you know,
bombarding,
like,
isn't it, really? And a lot of pressure, I would imagine, as well. Come on, you know, what are you going to do? Or constantly being asked by everyone, what are you doing? What are you doing? What are you doing? And I can imagine that's... Yeah. That's really stressful. And I'd like to talk about Reconnect though as well. And I'm going to ask you the question, what do you do with Reconnect? How does it help others?
Well, what do I do? Well, I like to sometimes, you know, when people ask me, what do you do? I say I'm a seven-dimensional healer. And I'm like, how do you say? I'm a jack of all trades and master of none. So basically, with Reconnect, we're a community-based awareness platform. And we adopted a methodology called the seven dimensions of wellness. And mental health is one of out of a total of seven. And it's about your physical health, it's your mental or emotional health, it's occupational, it's intellectual, it's environmental. And the idea, like, that you need to integrate all these seven dimensions on a daily basis into your life in order for you to be, like, mentally strong. So you need to be physically healthy, you need to be emotionally healthy, you need to be intellectually healthy, you need to be doing the job that you like, and you need to also care for what's happening around you on the planet and doing something about it. So under these seven dimensions, we've built partnerships with brands, with organizations, with individuals, coaches, psychologists, pet food brands, water bottles, whatever you can think of, like, that fits into those dimensions. And then we actually collaborate with them on driving awareness through content, through events, initiatives, humanitarian work. Like, we're actually working on projects related to mental health support, for example, for Lebanon, which is now, like, the suicide rates have just jumped off the roof in the last 2 weeks because of the further currency depreciation. And, like, we're trying to support the suicide prevention line and providing volunteers, funding, technology, whatever. We're also working on an environmental project as well, like with Earth Hour. I hope they're hearing us. And maybe, like, we do what we needed to do. And thankfully, we've had a big community of people, like, believing in us and, like, collaborating with us, and I think we're building something wonderful for the UAE and for the Middle East.
It certainly sounds like it, and I love the fact that it's this holistic approach as well. It's not just one-dimensional. You're looking at it's all the seven dimensions of wellness.
Life Balance on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Good afternoon. I'm joined by Roger Shakatora, who is the founder of Reconnect, a mental strength and wellness platform founded during the pandemic. And as I've just found out, just a couple of months ago, and it's really interesting, Roger, that you said it was actually launched on Happiness Day, which seemed quite apt.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me again on this talk. And we just actually literally launched on Happiness Day, which was a few weeks ago. And we chose that date because we do talk about mental strength and not mental health, because mental health is very much associated with medical terms, with stigmas, with a lot of, negative conditions. And we launched on Happiness Day because this is what we believe we'd like to help people achieve happiness through being mentally strong. So we launched on Happiness Day at XDA Gallery in Al Fahidi district, and we were supported so much by the local authorities, especially Dubai Culture, we had like this mix of misery and happiness, to be honest, because people expressing their journeys in mental health, and this is fantastic because biggest problem is that people don't talk about it.
Absolutely.
And when they do talk about it, they're stigmatized. And when they're stigmatized, they do self-stigmatization. And self-stigmatization is the biggest problem because, you know, you are told and you tell yourself that you are depressed or anxious. Then you become, like, it's literally about becoming what you tell yourself you are. It's like a kind of neuro-linguistic programming. What you tell yourself is who you are. So we launched on Happiness Day because we are a happiness platform. Our logo is even a smiley face. We're a yellow color, so we're a very happy brand and an organization. And this is what we like to, you know, whenever even we talk to our, you know, people on social media, we always send them smileys and hearts and love and flowers and stuff like that.
It's nice. It's nice. You've got to do it. And I think even if it just gives you a little smile, even inside, it's better, isn't it? It can certainly make you feel better. But just quickly, a few more minutes left with you, Roger, but I'd like to see if I can get some tips from you for people who are listening right now who are finding it difficult to disconnect, to reconnect. What could be some of the things that you would suggest that they do?
Okay, it all started actually with a book called The 5 a.m. Club by Robin Sharma. And it's actually about like spending time alone in peace and silence, because when you sit alone in peace and silence at 5 a.m. in the morning, you are forced to think beyond distractions. So when you do that, you literally actually start asking the questions. It's such a creative time. It's such a beautiful time. The idea behind it is that you create your own world instead of actually being dragged into others' problems. So if you wake up at 8 and you start work at 9, you're literally getting dragged into others' problems, your mother's problems, your brother's problems, your wife's problems, and your boss's problems. But waking up early and having the right routines, managing your own routines and your disconnection times, for me, it's 5 a.m. I disconnect from 5 to 8. I don't talk to anybody. Like, if anybody jumps on my, like, time, I say, like, leave me alone.
It's your space. It's your time. It's your meditation, really, your self-meditation.
Yeah, well, I don't sit in a certain position. I can like, literally be dancing in the darkness at 5, like, with my music. I DJ, like, you know, I do what I love, and I think this is my next point, is, like, doing what you love. Yeah. Like, most people are, like, anxious about doing what they love. It's either because of what other things, or actually because they're scared that they will fail. But actually, like, the number one rule of success is that you will only succeed if you are doing what you love. Because as long as you're not doing what you love, I mean, it's always going to be one failure after the other. Mm. At least be responsible for failing at doing what you love rather than failing on your life doing what you don't love. So.
Roger, thank you so much. I could continue this conversation for much longer, but I'm so conscious of time. And it has been really wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us today.
So
it's
we'll
really
send
important.
You a smiley too. Thank you so
I'd
much.
I'd love a smiley. You're making me smile right now anyway. So
thank you so much.
Thank you. Roger Cheshire there, who's the founder of Reconnect. Check it out. Loads of smiley faces there. A mental strength and wellness platform. I wish you all the very best. Thank you, Roger.
Thank you so much. Have a nice day.
Bye. And you too.
This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Join the conversation
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
You can also find out the podcasts on the website www.dubaieye1038.com or wherever you find your podcasts. Afternoons with Helen Farmer is live weekdays 2 till 5 p.m.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.